Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, trees and non-binaries. Welcome to another exciting episode of Fantastic Players, the podcast here on the Fantastic Universes Network, where I, Adam Ray, the Tinkerer, and a very special guest talk about all my favourite things in the world of gaming, be they PC, console, tabletop, and everything in between. For those of you listening to us through our Patreon support, you have a rare privilege of being able to hear this show unedited and uninterrupted, as well as advanced written access to all of our print copy that we have on fantasticuniverses.com. Now, dear listeners, cast your mind back to January to MegaCon. I was there covering the news to my delight and having an amazing time at the first convention of the year. On the Sunday, my mental health got a bit of the better of me and I was like, can't be asked, can't be bothered to go. Do I even really need to be there? Imposter syndrome setting in. But I was like, no, this is a rare privilege to go to a convention like this on the dime of the reputation of the websites you write for. Suck it up and actually go. And the first thing I do when I stride in, going through the card gamer zone, was I see today's very special guest profiling something that I had heard great many things about. And that, honestly, this interaction with this delightful human made the entire weekend worth it, because the content behind this new TCG is deeply exciting to me. And we're going to talk all about it with Ben, aka Zistral, the mind behind Yellow Card TCG. How are you, my good pal?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. We were talking about it a lot at MegaCon. We're sort of kindred spirits in the fact that, like, we are very deep in TCG goodness. I don't know how much of the rest of the show you've covered here, but me and my usual teammate, Connor, aka Okari, we have dabbled with every collectible card game under the sun, and Star Wars is one that I want to take quite seriously when it shows up, because it's an IP that me and many, many people love. But we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here. You are new to the show, and we'd love to have you on, so something I like to do with us newcomers here on Fantastic Players is to talk a little bit about your gamer backstory, because I know you dabble with every card game under the sun, practically. But where did your love of gaming and card gaming and all of that good stuff begin?
Yeah, so it's quite a long story, so I'll try and keep it relatively brief. When I was about 6-7 years old, so we're talking like 2000-2001, my parents got me a private tutor, as most concerned Asian parents do for their children who aren't doing A+ in school. And, you know, it was good. I was learning quite a bit. I was practicing a lot. And my teacher was like, oh, Ben, I know that, you know, you seem like a very smart, energetic kid. I have a new way of, like, helping you learn mathematics. And here's Magic the Gathering. And at the time, I thought, oh, this is just a nice casual thing. And little did I know it would be this first domino in a long line of, let's say, financial disasters. But yeah, my tutor taught me Magic the Gathering. I didn't take it too seriously because I was just, you know, single digits kid, like, oh, this is just a nice game, like cool cards. And I kind of forgot about it for a year or two. And then when I finally got into, you know, old enough to have my own money, my friends and I, we got into Pokemon, the video game. I went to an event and they were showing off the card game, and I thought to myself, oh, I've played Magic the Gathering before. This is in a similar vein. I should be fine. And yeah, it pretty much just went from there. Like, I picked up Pokemon TCG, got back into Magic TCG, and before long, I started going to actual tournaments, building real decks, getting competitive. And from that point on, every time a new TCG came out or someone was like, hey, have you heard about this card game? I would just throw myself in it, learn to play, absorb everything. And that extended into learning Weishwartz and Magic the Gathering, Weishwartz and Carfight Vanguard in university. I then picked up pretty much like 4 or 5 other Japanese card games, like, as I graduated. Then when One Piece came out, I learned that. Battle Spirits, I learned that. Digimon came out, I learned that. I just really, like, threw myself in the ecosystem, like, of all card games. You know, Flesh and Blood came out, I learned that. I'm not playing Flesh and Blood as much nowadays, but it's something that I respect the gameplay for. I know that a lot of people that play it. And yeah, like, since then, I've just found that I really enjoyed, like, the problem solving of, like, you know, how do I build this deck to do this? Or I'm in this scenario with these cards, how do I win in this position? And just, like, sharing that knowledge with other people, you know, people telling me, like, oh, hey, Ben, I've built this deck, it does this, like, why don't you learn to play it? And I would then share that on to other people. Just having this sort of back and forth of, like, being able to connect over, like, these ideas and concepts that you intrinsically know without having to worry about, oh, you know, who are you? Like, what are your views? Like, you know, when I first met Adam at MegaCon, I think it was like 5 minutes into the conversation that I asked him his name. Like, the first thing I asked him was, how many TCGs have you played before? To which he replied, all of them. And, you know, we got into a whole thing about, okay, great, here are the mechanics you'll already know. Here are some things that you won't know. And, you know, we just immediately got to a great start of like, cool, I know that you know what you're talking about. You know that I know what I'm talking about. We have the shared ground and we're off to the races.
Yeah, and I think I really respect it there, because it meant that, like you said, when we trialed out Star Wars Unlimited, it meant that you didn't have to pull any punches, and you didn't. You gave me a good game there. That was an excellent showcase of Star Wars actually at its best. But I relate so heavily to so much of the stuff you were saying, just wanting to throw yourself into the card game genre because of the problem solving, because of the mental gymnastics. When you play well at every turn, there's a lot of elements to it where you've got to be like, yes, I need to think and manage things carefully. But a lot of the times it's a key time to analyze where certain things went wrong in a match, so that you can learn so much and just improve your skills better. It's a style of gaming that I'll always come back to for that reason. So with that said, we're on to the main event in a galaxy far, far away, because I had heard rumblings of Star Wars Unlimited being shouted out at the end of last year, and I'd seen influencers like Pleasant Kenobi, a big magic creator, already getting some of his creators' vaults and some of that other good stuff. But I got my first chance to actually like look at it in January, and it's a crying shame on my part that it's taken so long to arrange this chat, but still, better late than never. Warp speed isn't always reliable. So in the broadest strokes, for I do believe our listeners do have an above average understanding of card games. So in the broadest strokes, Star Wars Unlimited, how does it feel compared to like the actual IP? How does the gameplay feel? What's new and what's familiar?
I think it's a very well-designed TCG, and it's very different to anything most people have played before. So a little bit of background. Obviously, this is not Fantasy Flight's first card game. It's not even the first Star Wars card game. We had Star Wars Destiny around, like, what, 10 years ago? And unfortunately, you know, as we know, Fantasy Flight don't have the greatest track records when it comes to keeping card games alive. But I'll address that later on, because I've heard some things through the grapevine that does fill me with a bit of confidence. But yeah, the way I would describe the gameplay of Star Wars Unlimited is it takes the best parts of Hearthstone and combines them with the best parts of Legends of Runeterra. So the actual actions, the actual playing the game, like putting cards onto the table, taking actions, like winning the game. Anyone who's familiar with like Shadowverse, Hearthstone, to an extent Lorcana, will be very familiar with Star Wars Unlimited straight away. But where Star Wars Unlimited differs from these other games is the pacing and the dynamicism, which in my opinion is one of the all-time like selling points of the game. And obviously, this is an audio podcast. We don't have video. I can't show you anything, but I hope you'll allow me to do a little bit of self-advertisement as we speak. I'm in the middle of editing, recording, and publishing a tutorial video on how to play the game, which people can find on my YouTube channel, Yellow Card TCG. Hopefully, by the time this goes out, I will have finished that, but I make no promises.
Well, it's funny you say that. So, sorry to cut you off there. It's funny you say that. We here at Fantastic Universes are starting to foray a little bit into putting our podcasts onto YouTube with the sort of like a simple thumbnail. So when that video is ready, there may be little excerpts of it into the video version itself for certain viewers to see. But you'll find links to Yellow Card TCG in the description of this, of wherever you're listening to. So do check out all of Ben's content, because he's covered many other games in addition, and we'll have a large profile on Star Wars Unlimited when that is ready.
Mm-hmm. Yep, thank you. So to explain in audio form for now, the dynamicism I'm talking about comes from how turns work. So in most card games, you take your turn, you do your thing in your sequence, and every now and again, your opponent might be able to interact in some way, shape, or form. Star Wars blows that completely out of the water, because we don't call them turns, we call them phases. Because in each phase, player A will take an action, and then immediately after, player B will take an action. So the phase is shared, and you take it in turns to act within those phases. So for example, in the beginning of a turn, Adam might start by declaring an attack with one of his characters. I will then respond by playing a card. Adam will then play another card, and then I will start attacking. And they will go back and forth, until we both say we're done, at which point the phase ends, and then we ready our resources and prepare for the next phase. And what I really, really like about that dynamicism, it means that in something like Pokemon or Magic or even like Vanguard or Weiss, like pretty much every card game I've played so far, you're able to like build this really complicated plan of like, okay, I'm going to do this, then this, like I'm going to play this card, which makes my character have three additional attack, which means it's now strong enough to take down his character, which means that I can then attack with this other character unimpeded and get the on attack effect, and I will have this result. That doesn't happen in Star Wars, because in Star Wars, the moment you play a card saying, I'll give my character plus three attack, your opponent can now be like, okay, his next action is probably going to be to attack with this big character, so I'm going to play this card to immediately get rid of this big character. And now suddenly your plan is in shambles because now you can't get rid of their character. And it's this like having to continuously replan your strategy as you go, while also factoring in what your opponent can do into your plans, just adds this extra dimension of like, oh, I also need to play around this card. I need to, what if he attacks me first? What if he does this first? And as someone who likes solving puzzles and solving problems, having that extra level of complexity is just, I find myself having to like stop and think like, okay, what about this? What about that in a game of Star Wars so much more than I would in any other game.
You are really rewarded for managing the action economy a lot in this game, because you can just like Voltron sort of up one particular hero, like your Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, but that just makes it a huge target. And if you sink all your resources into that, that does really hamper you because actions pass back and forth. I've actually tried my best to try and sell a lot of friends and family who are into games but not into like TCGs on this, because it almost has like a chess style feel to it where there's consistent actions and decision points, because there have been times in like especially Pokemon, I think Pokemon's a big culprit of this, where Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh, well, someone will have a phenomenal turn where a thing will search for another thing that buffs another character on board, and then it will trigger another effect. You set a card that loops through another thing, you search, set up tribute, some stuff, bring it back, where you are setting up for one elaborate key turn, but your opponent's still there waiting for windows to respond, if at all. But in this game, you don't necessarily have that. You're rewarded for diversifying and sticking to your deck's game plan, but you still have to understand and manage what they're doing, because they could do anything as soon as the action passes back to them.
Yeah, it's very incremental advantage. Like, you know, these, instead of like Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh, where you have like one gigantic action that you can pinpoint, this is where the game has turned around. Star Wars is for like little things like, oh, if I had just attacked this instead, if I had like played this card instead, things would have changed down the line, which I think is also really cool. And to bring it into, you know, the link to the IP, which I know a lot of people are going to be interested in, I think that ties really well to Star Wars as a whole, because, you know, Star Wars is a space opera. It's about, you know, a multi-year saga about this family. Well, the core saga is about the family, and, you know, from the grandparents down to the children and everything. And a lot of it is very strategic. Like, sure, you have like lightsaber duels, you have like elements of intrigue, but a lot of it is all setting up the seeds of plans over time. Like, you know, Palpatine is planning, like, controlling Anakin. You've got the rebels planning their assaults against the Empire. All of these things is, like, the Star Wars itself as a story is not made or is not a make or break on what any one specific moment in time. It's all of these things leading together, interacting together. Like, my personal favorite piece of Star Wars media, the Timothy Zahn Thrawn novels. Oh, yeah. And what I love about those is that they don't read like a film. They read like very slowly, very deliberate. Like, he spends chapters setting up ideas and like dropping points that will come back in later on, or he reveals elements that characters know that we didn't know, and it makes for a very dramatic, yeah, this is what's been happening over the last like four or five chapters that we had no idea about. And I just love that sort of strategic, slow, not necessarily gradual, but very much unrelenting is the word I want to use. Like, there's always progress. You always feel like there's something happening.
Yeah, that's definitely true. There's never a moment in this game where, like, cards are dead or ineffective, because worst comes to worst, at the end of the round, when the initiative switches over, you can just turn that into resource to fuel some of your later plays. And, like, again, in the actual Star Wars story, there's definitely moments where it feels like the characters in the story are rewarded for, like, taking initiative and actually going forth there, because, like, the opening to Empire Strikes Back was the Imperials actually attacking at a moment where the Rebels player wasn't prepared for that kind of attack. So they've been able to get the flavor down in ways that most players didn't even realize, which is something we definitely appreciate. But so within the puzzle itself, I mentioned it a little bit, and we talked about it a little bit based on how similar it is to Legends of Runeterra. The starting players sort of decided by passing the initiative back and forth, but being able to manage it is very interesting, because if someone has blown through their resources or is trying to sandbag for a later turn, they could end their actions early, but the initiative is still going for their opponent, just like in the Genshin Impact TCG, so they can still sort of keep going even though their opponent can keep going even though they've chosen to end their actions. So there's so many different little layers of and moments to sort of manage, which I can really, really appreciate in a game like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, again, speaking to the flavor, going back to the flavor again, like, one of my other favorite things about the game is that Star Wars is obviously a very rich IP. There's lots of characters, there's lots of stories, there's lots of everything to draw upon. And it's very rare that a game captures the essence of an IP so well. Like, you know, let's look at Dragon Ball, for example. The Dragon Ball Super TCG is a decent TCG. Like, I've learned the rules for it, my friends have played it in the past, but all it really is just you collecting your favorite characters and just seeing how big the numbers are, which is, I guess, to an extent what Dragon Ball's about, but it doesn't have any of that, like, character synergy. It doesn't have any of the storylines of, like, you know, for example, Gohan learning to control his powers, or, you know, Trunks coming from the future and everyone having to deal with, like, the repercussions of the future. Similar story with Digimon. Like, Digimon has some decent flavor wins where you've got, like, the Royal Knights, you've got, like, the viruses. But Star Wars, I think, itself is a game that the guys who designed Star Wars are very obviously Star Wars fans. Like, just from the game mechanics alone, you've got the battlefield is split into two areas, ground and space, where you deploy on the ground area, you'll deploy characters like troopers or land speeders or the Jedi. And then in space, you'll deploy, like, X-Wings, TIE Fighters, Star Destroyers. And as you can imagine, space units are often higher costed, higher stats, have big flashy effects, whereas the ground units are, like, more low to the ground, very fast, very effective. And it feels exactly like a real battle would. Like, you've got, you know, these warriors on the ground skirmishing for, like, the early advantage, biding time for one player to, like, slam this giant, you know, space cruiser, which will, like, decimate the board or completely change the tides of the battle. So that's one element where the fantasy, where the flavor, like, really, really gets up. But also in the card design itself, like, when I was reading some of these cards for the first time, I was just, like, swooning. Like, in the demo decks alone, you've got Luke Skywalker, who deploys as a 7 HP unit. Very strong, very useful effect. But then in the Imperial deck, you've got a card called I Am Your Father, whose text reads, deal 7 damage to a unit unless that player says no. If they say no, you draw 3 cards. So casting I Am Your Father on Luke Skywalker is going to be exactly enough to take down Luke Skywalker, and is also exactly what happens in the film. And, like, whenever I demo the game, I use that as an example of, like, look, if you love Star Wars, here's why you should be playing this game.
Yeah, they have the flavor down so perfectly. That was the big sort of flavor win that I put in my a lot of the social shares sort of following up from MegaCon, because that, like, any Star Wars fan's going to absolutely love and get a kick out of that. How could they not?
First, there was the DC Comics News podcast. Then came the Spinner Rack. And now, the third show brought to you by the guys that brought you all that other stuff I just mentioned. I am the Knight. A story about the stories. A show celebrating Batman, the animated series. Week by week, episode by episode. Just when you thought it was safe to put on a pair of headphones, I am the Knight.
Why, hello there. I'm Seth Singleton, and I'm here to tell you about Mad Pup, a Harley Quinn cast. 3, 2, 1.
Harley Quinn? Harley fucking Quinn? What have we learned from this crazy show?
Making bat shark repellent relevant since 1966.
Oh, look, Booger.
And we've gone completely off the rails.
I hear the bat signal.
Shut up and battle me, nods.
I definitely do not fuck that.
In need of an adult-sized nemesis.
Humans make good fertilizer.
You can't fuck with Lois Lane.
For fuck's sake.
I'm a damn good cop.
Lot of lasers.
Educational and informative. The DC Comics News Podcast Network presents Mad Love, the Harley Quinn cast. Back to you, Seth.
So, tell us your thoughts. We'd love to hear from everyone out there. Or not. That's really up to all of you. Fuckers.
Picture this, someone who knows nothing about comics.
Someone who knows comics from movies, TV, and video games.
The complete ultra comics nerd.
You pick the character you want us to talk about.
You send us the questions you want answered.
You make the show.
A podcast by fans.
For fans.
Making new fans.
Superheroes.
Or
dummies.
Part of the Comics in Motion podcast network.
In a world of stereotypes, being called a geek comes with a certain image.
There is still that ingrained thing within me that is a little bit embarrassed about it.
In reality, geek culture has never been more mainstream, and behind every geek is a real story.
My dad was the one who got me into Star Wars and things.
Join me, your super dummy Paul, as I continue my learning experience and talk to the real people.
I'm a secondary school teacher, so I teach 11 to 16-year-olds in English.
Hear their stories exclusively on Fantastic Universes.
He's one of them, like, you've ever going to grow up? And I'm like, no, why should I? I like my life. I enjoy what I do. This is my hobby.
Available on all your favourite podcast catchers.
Hi, my name's Steve, and I'm here to tell you all about the DC Comics News Podcast. Every week, my friends and I sit down and discuss everything DC. Movies, TV and streaming, comic books, and everything in between. But don't just take my word for it. Here are a couple of our sponsors.
Listen to the DC Comics News Podcast. It's audio justice.
No. It's audio chaos. These wackos are crazier than I am.
Well, maybe you're both right. Whatever the case, you can find the DC Comics News Podcast on every podcast platform.
Apple Podcasts.
Google Play.
Spotify.
Stitcher.
And everywhere else you find podcasts. So, can I go now?
Let him go. He did everything you asked.
Hello, listeners. This is Tony Farina from DC Comics News and an occasional guest on Comics in Motion. I'm pleased to announce a new show called Indie Comics Spotlight. Each week, my guests and I will be taking a deep dive into a current title or a classic graphic novel from a publisher other than the big two. Consider this show the best of the rest. My hope is that we'll bring new readers to independent comics and give old readers a chance to share their thoughts. Join me each week in the Comics in Motion feed in your favorite podcast catcher.
So well handled that it's clear that, like you say, the designers deeply, deeply love Star Wars. But another reason why I think they deeply love Star Wars is we had a long look at the the card image gallery of the first expansion, and the vast majority of it was original trilogy, sure, but it was also very well followed up by just like a few hints of the new trilogy, some characters from the prequels, even Thrawn himself, one of your favorite characters. They handled it well enough to be like, yes, they are capturing all of Star Wars' history, and there's plenty of times to get a focus on some of the other movies or TV shows in some of the later expansions.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I'm just going to like list off some of the leader cards that are already in set one. So on release, you'll get to play with Krennic. You'll get to play with Palpatine. You'll get to play with Leia. You'll get to play with Cassian Andor. You'll get to play with Thrawn. You'll get to play with Jyn Erso. Like, that's pretty much, I think, every single era of Star Wars represented in just, you know, in the first set alone, which is crazy. And since MegaCon, we've actually had some reveals, some images come out of the upcoming sets. And we know for a fact now that Shadows of the Galaxy will feature Moff Gideon and Din Djarin.
Oh, wow. They've done that so well. Oh, that's so exciting. Oh, that's so good. Yeah, so they've really got elements of all of Star Wars' history just encapsulated just in the bigger set so that anyone can find a latching on point, but with the right focus on the original nostalgia of the original trilogy with the main characters represented well and some of the key story bits. But that's like, one cannot get more excited for a game like this because of how well they've handled the IP. But as we've said, we've talked about how strong the game plays. So let's talk a little bit about deck building, because I think we had a long talk about the benefits of some of the different styles of base that you could play. But like some of the colors breakdowns and like the actual deck construction for it, you talked a little bit in depth, but for our listeners, how does one build a deck from scratch for Star Wars?
Yeah, this is another part of the game design that I really love, which is the game is split into six colors and they're divided into groups of four and two. So the colors are called aspects. So you've got yellow, which is cunning, blue, which is vigilance, red, which is aggression, and green, which is command. So those are like the core aspects. And then you've got white and black, which is heroism and villainy. So as you can imagine, something like Darth Vader, his card is red and black because he's aggressive and villainous. But then a card like Hera Syndulla is green and white because she's command and she's heroic. So you've also got bases, which add one of the four base colors as well. So, for example, if you want to play Darth Vader, who's red and black, and you want to add some blue cards, you can play one of the blue bases. There is, as of yet, no heroic or villainous base, but what I like as well is that that's a design space to be explored, but there's so much. I could talk for ages about to-be-explored design space. But basically, once you build a deck, you'll have a leader and a base, and they'll have colors that compose of your deck. Unlike in, say, One Piece, or I think another color-based game, or Digimon, where you will primarily be playing cards that are in your deck's colors. In Star Wars, you are free to like put blue cards into a red-yellow deck. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. In fact, you're even free to put a villainous card into a heroic deck. But the way they approach it is something called an aspect penalty. So let's say that I'm playing blue Thrawn. So I get blue, yellow, and black in my deck's colors. I can play a green-black card, but it costs me two more resources to play. Or I can play a green-white card, but it costs me four more resources to play. So for every resource that you don't have access to, or sorry, every aspect that you don't have access to, cards cost two more, which I think is a really interesting balancing mechanic. For example, there's one card called Overwhelming Barrage. It's a five-cost green-black card. Choose one of your units. It gains +2/+2 for this phase, and then you can deal damage equal to that unit's power, or up to equal to that unit's power, spread amongst the board however you like. So you can choose like maybe your 5/5, it becomes a 7/7, and now you can spread 7 damage across your opponent's board. And this card, I think, is one of the strongest cards in the game right now, because it's one of the few cards that I've literally considered playing in every deck I can. Even though it's a green black card, I've considered playing it in Hera, which is green white. I've considered playing it in Thrawn, which I'm playing as blue, yellow, black. I've even considered playing it in Han Solo, which is red, yellow, white. I'm just paying 9 for it because it's that strong. Like, there's so much flexibility involved there. Like, thinking like, okay, I need this card for this time. I need that card for that time. I want to balance ground and space units because if my opponent just commits to the ground and I have only space, I'll get overwhelmed. But if I have only space and my opponent drops a massive... if I only have ground and my opponent drops a massive space unit, they will just, you know, overpower me altogether. Like, these balances are so interesting to think about. And even in set one, like, what base you choose has an impact on the game because the base controls how much life you have. You know, once your base goes to zero, you lose. So you can play a 30 HP base with no effect. Or you can play a base that has only 25 HP, but has a once per game action. Like, these trade-offs are really interesting because an aggro deck like Sabine or Grand Inquisitor will happily play that 25 HP base because those effects will usually help you win the game faster. But a slow, purposeful deck like Krennic or Thrawn will probably play the 30 HP base because they need to survive that initial onslaught, you know, as a control deck from aggro before they can start mounting a counterattack.
The deck building puzzle there is just so fascinating. We talked a lot about like the value of it because I'm an old school like grizzled control player from my Magic days. So unless the effects on the bases were really good, I'd be probably playing 30 HP vanilla bases for a lot of my time here in Star Wars because the controlled playstyle is just something that sort of always resonated with me. But the deck building tension of just being able to, you're encouraged to stick to the colors that are on your leader and your base, but the versatility that you get from being able to splash with a considerable but still manageable downside means that there's so much deck building variety here. There's really option for like staple cards to find their place, but there's no real downside to it. You just have to be able to manage your resources and be able to stay so that you can justify playing cards of that effect. But then again, if they're worth splashing for, then the effects are ubiquitous and huge. So everything is handled pretty well. The IP is strong, the deck building and the gameplay is all well-rounded. And all of the other research I've done around Star Wars has been just building my excitement even more. So I think we can all agree that it's something we're all going to be looking forward to here in the scene for the TCG community. So what can we see for Star Wars' future? When are the releases and what's the event structure looking like as far as you know?
Yeah, so set one is releasing on March the 8th. I don't know if this is going to be out by then or not, but hopefully before. So coming up soon. And I think there's already pre-release events happening, like starting this week all over the country. So if you're really interested, you can go up and down and see if your local store is running a pre-release event for it, which will include a special alt art Luke promo. Ooh. So that's nice and interesting. But beyond pre-releases and like small local levels, Final Fantasy Flight are not planning any major organized play within the first year, is what they've said. There is an organization called C3OP, you know, joke on C3PO, but the C3 stands for, like, I think, Collect, Command, and Community, and then POP obviously being organized play. So they will be launching a dedicated organized play body for Star Wars within the year. And then I think at the beginning of year two, they will have things like regional events, world championships, etc., etc. I think there's already a whole plan listed out on the Star Wars Unlimited website, which I think is incredible. Like, the fact that they're already planning that far ahead and they're willing to show us the, pull back the curtain and be honest with it, like, here's what we're planning in a way, I think is great. So even though the first year is going to be maybe a little bit slow in terms of, like, you know, not having like a world championships, it will eventually, like, be something that people can really commit to and like go into a lot. Like, you have the sort of casual cycle of, like, you know, pre-release, locals, you know, Magic's game days that they used to do, and then you have things like qualifiers and whatnot, like the bigger pro events that people might want to jam on, and that all coming together, like, it really feels like they've learned a lot from other card games. Like, for example, Magic has, in recent years, we all know that Magic has been putting a little bit less emphasis on their pro-level play. And when they did that, Flesh and Blood swooped in and was like, you want cash prizes? Here's cash prizes, go for it. And then Flesh and Blood pro-play really took off because they filled that niche. So Star Wars learning from that and be like, okay, people want different levels of organized play. It's going to take us a little bit of time to get there, but we will offer different levels of organized play. Or, for example, you look at, say, One Piece and Digimon, and it's like, oh, people really like full art, alternate art holos. We're going to learn from that. You know, Magic's only started doing that in the last few years, but Japanese games have been doing that since the beginning. So set one of Star Wars has alternate art, full art, holos, everything for the collectors, which is just really good to see.
Definitely. I honestly quite like the fact that they're being cautious and not putting huge nationwide or large-scale events from the early years. They want their game to breathe and to get the like the community and local base down first, so that the players that do go into those events are the players that are going to be the most hungry for it, the ones that have actually been there at their kitchen tables at the online client that you were telling me about and actually getting their games in. So that's a great... It's tricky because there's a possibility that they might not have the support needed to go into Year 2's big organized play events, but that will still breed a lot of sincerity and a lot of loyalty from a player base that they've been waiting for events like this so long that they're just going to jump on it as soon as it becomes available. So that's a really ambitious choice on their part, and not a lot of card games are that brave. I know that the newer kid on the block, Lord Connor, tried to get in-store events as quickly as they could, but those events were not especially well handled. So having that kind of patience, I really respect on Fantasy Flight's part.
Yeah, like it really shows, you know, that they do have long-term plans. Like, again, you didn't hear this from me, but word on the grapevine is that they've designed cards for Star Wars at least all the way up until like set 6 or 7.
Wow.
So they really intend for this game to be sticking around for quite a while. And even if they hadn't planned that far ahead, I think between seeing there's an unofficial Star Wars Unlimited community Discord that's like several, loads of people already, like the number of like the amount of discussion going on there about like, oh, here's what the market is going to look like for people that know about card games, or just here's something that I like, based on like how I'm playing the game, people looking for like just testing games, casual games, working on decks together. Like between, I think, the strength of the IP combined with the strength of the game itself, I think is really bringing people together. Like, you've got like card gamers who have been playing card games for ages. You've got Star Wars players who this is their first card game. Like everyone's coming together to really rally behind this game more than I've seen for like Lore Kana or Battle Spirits, which I think is very cool.
No, definitely.
So it definitely shows that they're doing something right.
Definitely. The strength of the IP, the strength of the deck building tensions, and the quality of the gameplay itself. I don't want to like say that I can look into the crystal ball, but I do want to at least hope that Star Wars has put itself into a really strong position going into its formal release and look to be, at the very least, a fan favorite in the TCG scene, and at the very least, one that I will be playing as heavily as I can alongside Flesh and Blood and the odd bit of Digimon here and there. But yeah, everything I hear and everything I read about it and everything I hear from people in the know such as yourself has me ever so excited. And I think this is something we can all look forward to if you're a card game appreciator like Ben and myself. Do you have any final thoughts you would like to leave myself and my dear listeners on before we blast off to a galaxy far, far away?
No, I think it's just a case of, I hope that the last 40 minutes have been enough to show like how much excitement we have for this game. As Adam says, all of my details will be in descriptions, like Yellow Card TCG. I primarily cover, for now, Vanguard and Weiss Schwartz, but once Star Wars gets off the ground, once I've opened my case, I'll be putting together a lot of material on that as well. Like I said, I'm already working on that tutorial. It's a game that I'm definitely willing to all in. A lot of my friends are willing to all in. I'll also make sure that Adam puts the link to the community Discord in the description as well, because that's a really great place to like get together with. But yeah, it's just a really awesome game. Like, I know that Fantasy Flight does have a history with card games, but this is something that I'm willing to have faith in, so I hope everyone else is as well. And yeah, hopefully sooner rather than later, I will see you all out on the battlefields.
You will expect to see it, and of course, dear listeners, do look down below for Yellow Card CCG on YouTube and the link to the Star Wars Discord. And one more time, what was their version of the online client where you can start to get test games in right now?
Primarily, people are playing PvP through Tabletop Simulator.
Right.
But if you do want to like just learn the basic rules and like get a feel for decks, there's a website called Force Table, which is, I think, made by the same guys that made the Lorcana. I think it's called Inkscape or something like that. There's a Lorcana one player, like, you know, versus an AI browser-based simulator, and they've modified it for Star Wars. So yeah, Force Table's really cool. You can use that to like check out the basics, and then once you've gotten a hand of that, jump into the community Discord, start asking for games, and going from there.
Yep, you'll find all of those handy-dandy links in the description down below. As for where to find more of my own content, you can, of course, look here on Fantastic Universes, where either here on the Fantastic Universes podcast or on our website proper, you can find all of my ramblings and musings in the worlds of gaming, be it PC, console, tabletop, everything in between. For DC Comics-related news, look to Dark Knight News, where I review multiple titles a month. Both Catwoman and Red Hood are in excellent spots right now. Follow me on the artist formerly known as Swizzer at Is It Tinkerer, and you can catch up with all of this exciting content and some very exciting things coming soon to go on Fantastic Universes podcast and within my own crossover with some dear friends very, very soon. But final big thanks to Ben for joining us here to inform us about the good news of Star Wars. May the Force be with you, dear listeners, and until next time, live free and play well.